Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Hello. We're going to be in another one of the commandments today. Sometimes these things are somewhat hard to teach because they're so short, but I think the implications that they bring to us have a scope far beyond their length. And, of course, we're in Exodus 20, verse 15 today, which very simply says, "Thou shalt not steal." I think as we explore all the implications of this command, it's going to be obvious that it relates far beyond simply the act of just stealing. So let's look at some general opening statements, then I'll look at the text itself, then some possible parallel passages that open up the truth, some application points, and some discussion questions, okay? I think it's significant that we recognize in context that most of the Ten Commandments, although they deal with specific acts in human society and in human worship techniques, the implication goes far beyond those specific examples to all of life. Example, when we talked about keeping the Sabbath, we felt like that one regular day out of seven to worship God was a symbol that God owned all days. And, of course, there is not a commandment about the tithe, but again, the Old Testament, that God took 10%, and there's three different tithes in the Old Testament. They usually were spread out over different years. Was a way of saying that God owned everything. Well, this negative commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," is another way of talking about that. And I think the implication is that God is the owner of all things. And because God is the owner, we can only be stewards. Now, this first part, I think, is significant. Because in our society, we have tended to separate the secular and the sacred. We've done that not only with our gifts, like this is to the church and this is for me, but we've done it in every other area, too. I think how we treat people, how we treat possessions, how we treat what we want in life really shows how we love God. I guess the most poignant example of that would be in 1 John chapter 4, verse 20 and 21. If someone says, "I love God," but hates his brother, he is a liar. For the one who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should love his brother also. In the context of our particular scripture passage, it would be, since we have respect for our covenant partner, we're not going to steal from him. We're not going to steal his wife. We're not going to steal his possessions. We're not going to steal his reputation. We're not going to steal his honor. We're not going to steal anything of his because we have respect for God that issues in respect for others. Another good parallel passage in 1 John, besides 1 John 10, 20, and 21, be 1 John 2, 7 through 11. And I hope you'll see that in connection with all that we're trying to do in this lesson. Stealing is primarily an offense against God. Now, much has been made about the idea of, does that mean I can steal from somebody who's not a covenant partner? Obviously not. But the immediate context of the Ten Commandments, of course, is the covenant people. Now, I think the second thing I want to say is that thou shalt not steal, like the surrounding commandments, are meant to maintain a level of fellowship among the people of God. We don't take a man's life, we don't take a man's wife, and we don't take a man's property. And inside of a covenant system, that's very important. We have learned from many of the other ancient law codes, like not only Lipit-Ishtar, but also the Code of Hammurabi and many other ones, that this ideal of personal property is dealt with. And it's certainly dealt with here in the Ten Commandments. Another general introduction is, as the other commandments focused on God's ownership of all things, so this one too. We are stewards, not owners. Our fallen nature drives us toward possessions. Yet, possessions won't fill our needs. Sometimes we try to steal them or possess them or have them. In reality, possessions aren't the key to life. I was noticing Psalms 50, I want to read that to you. Psalms 50, verses 10 through 12, because it speaks of God's ownership of all things. And the reason that stealing is bad, because in reality, we're stealing from God when we steal from our brother. That's a shocking statement, but I think it has validity. Here's God speaking. For every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on a thousand hills. I know every bird on the mountains, and everything that moves in the field is mine. If I were hungry, would I not tell you? For the world is mine and all it contains. Do you sense that what you have is a stewardship trust from God? And that what other people have is a stewardship trust that they've been given from God? And it is not your option to either gripe about what you have or forcibly take what another has. Now, you say, well, that's just pure Calvinism. No, I think it's the concept that God is sovereign. I think it's the idea that the reason we don't steal is because, number one, the possessions won't make us happy, and we think they will. And number two, I think the truth is, to steal anything is to steal from God. Now, let's look at the text itself, if we can. There's some interesting qualities here, and you might want to notice that. This is the third command in a row that has been only two Hebrew words. Just two Hebrew words. It's rather short. Now, what is the purpose of that? There is no object. It's not a complete sentence in a sense. We don't know what we're not supposed to steal. Some have assumed that the original form of this commandment had the object in place. And the object was, thou shalt not steal your covenant partner. And so this, they would say, is a verse on kidnapping. Now, I was noticing that Rashi said that, and he's going back to earlier rabbis. And also, I believe it was Albert Ault in 1929 wrote a commentary that's affected the Christian Protestant community about this same concept. And I think there is some validity to this, and here's basically the evidence. The context of the two previous commands emphasized a heinous sin that deserved death. It seems funny that you would have murder and adultery and then some lesser offense. They didn't have many rules in the ancient world, but what they did have usually resulted in taking your life. So it seems by the context, we're in a much more serious sin than just stealing, and I grant that's true. There is a parallel passage that is somewhat in the immediate context that specifically mentions kidnapping. And that, of course, is Exodus 21:16. The same truth is also alluded to in Deuteronomy 24:7. Now, you remember that Deuteronomy, basically, is the five recapitulatory sermons of Moses on the plains of Moab just before the people of God crossed the Jordan River under Joshua. So really, the Deuteronomy 24:7 is trying to sum up the law, and it mentions this kidnapping. So here was to take a neighbor's freedom, even his own body, into slavery. We have an example of this being done, of course, in Genesis 37, as Joseph's brothers sold him. But I think the short form is also contextually and linguistically defensible. I think the object is left off. Not out of a text being messed up in transmission, but that God wanted the verse to be wider than just kidnapping. Kidnapping is certainly an aspect of it, but it's much wider than that. It covers more of life. And I think because this whole idea of taking something that's not ours, something for which we have not worked in effort, something which does not issue in faith, becomes the problem. It not only grab something from another, thinking it'll make us happy, therefore defrauding the other, but it's really a cheat to us because it will not bring happiness. Now, the fact that it's recorded in short form, and my view of inspiration is that that God has preserved for us that what He wants to have, and there is no Hebrew or Greek or Aramaic manuscript that does have any other form than "Thou shalt not steal." I think it's short, so it widens the scope. And number three, I think there is a parallel passage in the immediate context that deals with stealing and the results. And that is Exodus 22, verses 1 and following, which basically deals with stealing and restitution and the penalties that go with different kinds of stealing crime. Jesus makes a direct allusion to this commandment in Matthew 19:18, where he quotes about stealing and its unfortunate consequences when he was talking about how can a man be right with God. And, of course, he alludes to the Ten Commandments, and it's simply, thou shalt not steal. I want to mention here that these other law codes we talked about, it's amazing how different as well as how similar these are to the biblical account. They are similar in the fact that all of them deal with stealing, which means they deal basically with the philosophy of the right of personal property. And, of course, this has some philosophical implications for the modern concept of laissez-faire capitalism. I'm not here to try to biblically support capitalism because I don't think there is a biblical economic system. But there is a biblical system that deals with economic things. And primarily, man's fallen attempt is to find happiness in things, and that will never happen. It must be happiness in God. And I think to say that personal property is a major truth of the Old Testament is to miss the thrust of the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, people are the major thrust and their redemption from their rebellion against God. So, although I think personal property is an aspect of this, it's not a major aspect. The ancient law codes had several very severe penalties for a thief. Primary was death. If not death, then physical mutilation, the cutting off of the hand, is modern Islam for a thief. In the ancient world, it was more the cutting off of the nose and the ears. And also, there was a 30 times, not percent, 30 times restitution. And if that could not be made, then death occurred. So most folks weren't that wealthy, and therefore it resulted in death. The commandment is much more lenient than that. The next major aspect I want to talk about is parallel passages, for I think they are going to draw a lot of light for us. Now, one of the major parallel passages is found in Leviticus 19. I think that's significant because it's the priestly legislation, and of course Leviticus 19:18 is the very famous, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself, for I am the Lord." Now, I want you to turn me to Leviticus 19, and I want you to notice the context in which this specific law about not stealing is going to be mentioned. Okay, notice verse 2. "Speak to all the congregation, the sons of Israel, and say to them, 'You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy.'" Now, in the context of this, "You shall be holy, for I am holy," it says, "Don't steal." Now, that is very significant, because the lifestyle of the covenant people should reflect the lifestyle of God's ethical nature. In other words, God has great respect for His creation, and He's going to deal with us in light of that. We have a freedom, but that freedom does not involve exploitation. And so I think it's obvious that God's an ethical God. It's obvious He wants us to live in certain ethical ways. And so we're to be holy as He is holy, because He's our covenant God. And then it mentions here a reverence for mother and father. "You shall keep the Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God." That goes right back to two aspects of the Ten Commandments again. "Do not turn to idols or make yourself molten gods. I am the Lord your God." Goes back to aspects of the Ten Commandments again. And when you offer a peace offering to the Lord, you shall offer it so that it may be accepted. And it shall be eaten the same day you offer it the next day, but what remains the third day shall be burned with fire. That is not included in the Ten Commandments, but other places in Scripture. Notice again, it mentions here in verse 9, "And when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, neither shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. Nor shall you glean your vineyards, nor shall you gather fallen fruit from your vineyard. You shall leave them for the needy, for the stranger. I am the Lord your God." Now, how does that deal with stealing? Again, it's a sense of God's ownership of all things. God owns the crop, so men are to leave enough for the poor, the alien, and the stranger, right? They're not to take their land, everything, because the land belongs to God, and God wants to help the poor. Now, you say, well, one way to help the poor, the poor can steal from the rich. No, that's not an answer at all. And so here we have in the next verse about, let's see, verse 11, "You shall not steal or deal falsely nor lie to one another." Now, what's the aspect here? Well, the answer to poverty is not stealing. The answer to poverty is to trust in God, who's going to work this thing out. You say, I don't like that. I like to go out there and be aggressive. American individualism flies in the face of some of spiritual principles connected to the sovereignty of God in history. We're not to steal because we're covenant people. Now, if you go on down through here, it continues in that same vein. You shall not oppress your neighbor nor rob him. The wages of a hired man are not to remain with you all night. What is this talking about? Exploiting your neighbor. Supposed to pay him a fair wage and not. All of this is involved with stealing. Do you mean to tell me that if I glean too much of my field, that's stealing from the poor? Yes. If I swear falsely, that's stealing from another person? Yes, you're stealing his reputation. You mean if I oppress the poor, I rob him? Yes. If you keep back a fair wage from a man, you're robbing that man? Yes. And I think modern society needs to hear that unfair business practices are robbery against God. You say, no. You know, I've been amazed. People mention me all the time, well, now, Bob, business is business. No, it's not. If you're a Christian, you're a Christian every area of your life. And there's more to stealing than just going and ripping somebody else's property off with a gun. Now, it comes down through here and says, don't slander, don't defraud, don't be unjust. And then look at verse 17. You shall not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart. You may surely reprove your neighbor, but you shall not incur sin against him because of him. You shall not take revenge nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. You mean that stealing is caught up in my view about God that's expressed in the way that I treat my fellow covenant partner? Yes, friend, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. Robbery is or stealing or theft is just one aspect of how we treat one another in God's name. Now, another one that I, let's see. How about, let's look at Amos 8, 4 through 7. Amos 8. You'll turn over there with me. Notice this one now. Hear this, you who trample the needy and do away with the humble of the land, saying, when the new moon is over, so that we may buy grain, and the Sabbath that we may open the wheat market to make a bushel smaller and a shekel bigger, and to cheat with astonished scales, so as to buy the helpless for money and the needy for a pair of sandals, that we may sell the refuse of the wheat. What's this talking about? There's more to stealing than breaking in a back room bedroom some night. The stealing here is unfair business practices. And if you'll notice verse 7, God says, I have sworn by the pride of Jacob, indeed I will never forget any of their deeds. Boy. The other one I wanted to mention to you is Micah, which is over just a couple of books, if you would. Micah chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. Very famous passage about sacrifice. Listen to this. I see. I'm going to start in verse 6. With what shall I come to the Lord and bow myself before the God on high? Shall I come to him with burnt offerings, with yearly calves? Does the Lord take delight in 1,000 rams, 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I present my firstborn for my rebellious acts, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Now, that's why we don't steal. Some people say, well, I don't steal because I'm afraid I'll get caught. That's not the issue. We don't steal either reputation or things or rip people off. Why? Because we're related to God. And what He wants is justice. That's significant. I think finally also, if you want to look at Exodus 22, 1 and following, I think an aspect that we have forgotten in all this discussion about stealing, the New Testament is going to say, Ephesians 4, don't let him who steals, steals no more. Well, I want to add one part to that based on Exodus 22, 1 and following. The almost forgotten aspect of Old Testament truth, and I think it is implied in the New Testament, is restitution. Do you mean if I do exploit my brother, if I do steal from him, that I need to make it right even after I'm right with God? Yes. Yes. You say, well, Bob, what does that mean? Should I pay back three times? Well, personally, I'm not that hard and fast on my interpretation that you got to go back to the Old Testament to get how many times. But I think there's some letters we ought to write. There are some folks who have cheated in school who ought to write back and say, I'm sorry, please forgive me. There are some folks who have ripped people off in business deals, even other Christians. They ought to contact them and apologize. There are some people who've actually taken physical property from folks. They ought to restore it. There are some people who have stolen another man or woman's reputation to make themselves look better. They ought to do whatever it takes publicly to set that right. And folks, without that, I'm not sure we're really repentant. With that in mind, I'd like to go to some application truths, if I could. And I want to show you a good little book. This little book is really one that I have enjoyed on this. I've been reading several different books on Exodus. This is Smoke on the Mountain by Joy Davidman. Now, Joy Davidman is the wife of C.S. Lewis. And in this little book, a commentary, she has made some wonderful observations, and I want to note about two or three of them. Let's see. Here's one of them. She retranslates this verse, "Thou shalt not try to get something for nothing." Have you noticed in our day how lotteries are becoming a real big way to raise taxes, supposedly for good causes? And they offer millions of dollars, you know, in a way for that. I'm not wanting to condemn lottery wholesale, but I tell you this. When our whole life is consumed with trying to get something for nothing, we're on the wrong track, folks. We're just on the wrong track, thinking that if we just had enough money, we'd be happy. No, folks, you won't. Now, I think it's important that she also said about property. This is good, I think. Property is neither a sin nor an inalienable right, but alone a trust from God. Oh, is that true? Could that really be true? That I don't have the right to property? That the only right that I have is the right to love? Boy. Do you mean that things aren't a sin? Oh, no. There have been many wonderful people who've dealt with possessions in a marvelously spiritual way. Things aren't the problem. We're the problem. I also want to mention the New Testament parallel. Like all other sins of the fallen heart, which, of course, is this idea of stealing, they are dealt with by having a brand new heart. Ephesians 4:28. And not only is it amazing that the sin of the old nature is take, 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 take for me. When you get the new heart, the new nature wants to share, share, share. So really the opposite of thou shalt not steal is thou shalt share with your covenant partner. Our respect for God is clearly seen in our respect for other covenant partners. This truth overshadows the entire Decalogue. Modern man steals in many ways. I want to read you one of my favorite sin professors has been F.B. Huey, and he's wrote a commentary. It's one of the Galatian study guide commentaries. I want to read you his little section about how modern men steal and break this commandment in a modern culture. The spirit of this commandment can be broken in other ways than taking the property of another violently or covertly. The employee who takes paper clips, postage stamps, stationery, etc., from his employer for personal use. The taxpayer who falsifies his tax return. The friend who borrows money or even a cup of sugar without the intent of returning it. The storekeeper who uses dishonest scales or engaged in any kind of fraudulent business practice. The student who takes credit for work that was not done, what was done by someone else. The employee who loafs on the job but accepts full wages. The nation that takes the land of another by war. All these violate the commandment. Wow. This is Joy Davidman. Listen to what she says about this. I thought it was extremely interesting. Listen to this. By a careful definition, the thief is not only one who steals my purse, but one who steals my trade. He who underpays me. He who overcharges me. He who taxes me for his own advantage instead of mine. He who sells me trash instead of honest goods. The ultimate form of theft, undoubtedly, is slaveholding, which denies a man even the ownership of his own body. Well, I think it's obvious there are many, many ways that we can violate this sin. Here are some discussion questions you ought to think about. How does modern man practice stealing? How is restitution related to repentance? How does this verse relate to capitalism's view about property? The way you answer those questions will see if you have caught the profound impact on every man that this ancient Hebrew law forces us to examine. I think not only our economic system comes under the judgment of God, but our individual motives that focuses so much priority into things that we will get them at whatever cost. And whether it be things that we touch or the intangible things of reputation, power, fame. My friend, to take from a covenant partner is to take from God. God cares about the fellowship of His people and about their witness to a world that's searching for meaning and truth. And if they don't see it in our lives and our priorities, we'll probably not see it at all. I've enjoyed being with you, and I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.